This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Also sponsored by Windstar Farm. Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, flying solo here this afternoon on the program as the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, remains back in Florida. I am in our Lexington, Kentucky studios and welcoming everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer, your smartphone, or your tablet at horseracingradio.net. And don't forget that if you miss any of our Trainer Talk shows, you can go back to our website. You can listen to a podcast at your leisure. They're all archived. You just click on the show tab. It takes you to Trainer Talk, and then you can listen as long as you would like. And boy, there have been some good ones, and tonight promises to be much of the same. Going to be joined by trainer Jordan Blair, who is one of the young up-and-coming stars in the sport. He is entering just his fourth year of training, and he's a huge fan of Trainer Talk, which I was glad to hear. And tonight he gets to be the star of the show. Jordan is with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jordan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board and looking forward to hearing your story. And you put a smile on my face when you said, you know what? I've gone back. I've listened to a bunch of the old shows. I love Trainer Talk.
Oh, that's absolutely true. You know, I don't get serious satellite radio, but with Apple's iPhone and podcast, I've been able to go back and listen to some of my favorites. I've listened to almost all of them, but, you know, every Hall of Famer you got perks my ears up.
Yeah, I was going to ask you who your favorite was. That might not be a fair question, but who were some of your favorites?
I'd say, you know, Bill Mott, Kieran McLaughlin, Bob Baffert, you know, they've all got wonderful stories that, you know, we don't get to hear. And, you know, hearing where they started from, you know, it's a great inspiration. And, you know, it's enjoyable to listen to as well.
Well, I mentioned you being one of the young up-and-coming trainers in the sport, and people are going to hear much more about Jordan Blair moving forward. But you're 35 years old. You were born in Frankfort, Kentucky, which, for people that don't know, is just north of Lexington. Of course, you were raised in Lexington. So as a kid, growing up in the horse capital of the world, were there other trainers that you kind of followed or maybe looked up to?
Well, yes and no. I kind of was an outsider looking in as a kid. My involvement with the sport was just you know, watching the races, going to Keeneland. So I wasn't, you know, as a young guy, I didn't have, you know, I didn't aspire to be a trainer. And I didn't have, you know, trainers, specific trainers that I looked up to until I started getting more into the business. You know, my association with horse racing was through my mother, Debbie Blair. She worked for the Breeders' Cup for almost 23 years. And so my very first horse race that I remember going to was the Breeders' Cup. I believe it was 1988 at Churchill Downs. And like I said, the first race that I ever remember seeing was Ali Sheba crossing the wire in the slot in the dark. Wow. At Churchill Downs. So, you know, I didn't grow up in the sport, but, you know, through my mother, I would get to go see these fantastic events, excuse me, almost every year. And, you know, that being a fan like that, you know, got me hooked.
Yeah, your story is so similar to mine because I didn't grow up born into the sport in any form or fashion. I grew up going to Saratoga, watching the races from the rail. Easy Goer was the first horse that I really fell in love with because of the Travers Stakes, which I consider to be kind of the first time I remember going to the races with a bunch of my buddies and seeing him, you know, win that Travers. So it's very similar in that respect. Why on earth become a horse trainer then? What led you to that point in your life?
That's a good question. You know, I was always interested in becoming involved in the industry in some form or fashion. And, you know, after high school, you know, I went to the University of Kentucky, studied, you know, agricultural economics. And I had several stints at some farms. Gainsborough might have been the first, you know, just being kind of a grunt worker. But it was fantastic seeing that kind of operation and seeing those kind of horses. And then, you know, finished my undergraduate, worked some sales, a lot of yearling sales, and then went to graduate school in Mississippi State and got my MBA there. And then when I got out, I actually did the Kimmy internship at Pin Oak Stud. And I got credit for school, and I got to be involved with another fantastic operation. Where Clifford Berry, the general manager, really kicked my butt into gear and taught me how to really work and how to really focus. And so I did that, and then when I finished that, I actually went to look for a real job, and not particularly in the horse industry. And I had actually had a couple of job offers that didn't have anything to do with the industry, and I kind of sat down and reflected, and I didn't want to sit inside an office all day, and I decided I wanted to be a part of the horse industry. And, you know, the farm life wasn't for me, and the sales were great, but, you know, it was a lot of travel and the same thing over and over again as far as working for the consignment. And so I decided I wanted to do something on the track. I had no idea how the track operated, you know, what the jobs were. But I knew some of the players then, and I went to work for Kenny McPeak on his farm in Lexington, Magdalena Farm, just starting as a hot walker. And, you know, it wasn't very long until I went down the Gulfstream. You know, kind of went through the motions as a groom and then, as a foreman. And when I came back to Lexington, an assistant job with Kenny opened up. And, as soon as I got in the groove, it was just a natural fit. You know, I could understand the horses. You know, I got to understand how to manage a barn slowly. But working with the horses, laying the foundation and getting them fit and getting them to the races, it was just natural for me. It wasn't difficult. And, you know, ever since I became an assistant for Kenny, there was no turning back.
Talking with trainer Jordan Blair here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jordan, you mentioned Clifford Berry and Pin Oak Stud, and you said Clifford kicked your butt into gear. Were you the type of kid that needed to have your butt kicked into gear?
Well, at the time, I sure didn't think so, but looking back, absolutely. You know, I kind of breezed through school. College, you know, wasn't difficult. I didn't apply myself as probably as much as I should have. And then going out and having a real job in the real world, you know, required a lot of focus. And, you know, I went to college and I had fun. Same for graduate school, even though it was, you know, a lot more difficult and, you know, a lot more principled. But, and especially in the horse business, it's so detail oriented, and it requires focus and hard work. And when I was at the working for Clifford, especially at the beginning, you know, I might roll in a couple of minutes late. You know, it was early mornings for me. I didn't really understand. And, you know, I might drink my coffee for a little too long. You know, get to a stall a little later than I should to muck it out. And, you know, after probably several months, and Clifford finally sat me down and said, you know, this is what you have to do. You know, he told me that, you know, you focus on the details and everything else will fall into place. And ever since then, I've lived by that principle of just being focusing on the details and letting, you know, the big stuff fall into place as it may. And, you know, I've stayed in touch with Clifford ever since. But he was, you know, I needed that at the time. I didn't understand. So, yeah, it was great. It was a fantastic, you know, 6 months there. What a wonderful place to work, and what a wonderful guy, and Mrs. Abercrombie. What wonderful people to work for.
What kind of a teacher was Kenny McPeak?
Oh, man. You know what? Yeah, that was another graduate school, you know, for me, because I didn't know how to run a barn, you know, how to manage this type of thing as a, you know, as a horse training operation or a thoroughbred training operation. So he was a very good teacher. You know, first things first for Kenny, it's going to the sales and buying the horse. And that's, you know, for any trainer, you know, it's all about the stock that you have. And Kenny has a reputation for finding very, very good horses for minimal budget. And so, you know, I would go to the sales with Kenny. At first, there was no short listing. I wasn't short. I was just, you know, an observer. And, you know, would just watch him, listen, and learn, and see the things that he would forgive, and see the things that he would pass on, and just try to absorb as much of that as possible, knowing that his track record, you know, I was there after he had bought Curlin, and so, you know, we kind of all knew about that, Take Charge Lady and Repent, and so on and so forth. And when I was there, he had bought a filly by the name of Dream Empress for $60,000 that went on to win the Alcibiades and run second in the Breeders' Cup. And the list goes on and on. So, you know, that was probably, I took a lot away from Kenny's operation from that. And then he was also, you know, very detailed, very organized, and kept all the different satellite divisions on the same page. So when you got a horse from somewhere else, you knew what was going on, and vice versa. And I've brought that into my operation, that attention to detail as far as the organization goes. And then, you know, the care of the horses was top class. So it was it was 4 years that I was with Kenny, and it was a great 4 years.
How did you know that the time was right to go out on your own?
Oh, I don't think the timing is ever right. That's a tough one, because it's like I told you, as soon as I became an assistant for Kenny and you know, got the foundation for what, you know, I needed to know to be an assistant and to ultimately be a trainer, I knew that was what I wanted to do. So every time that I moved on something forward, you know, it was just another step for me going out on my own. And, you know, besides having the skill set to be a trainer and possibly the capital to go out and do it on your own, you need the client. And that's by far, at least for me, the hardest part, you know. And my goal as a trainer was to always, at least now, maybe not when I very first went out on my own, was to have real quality clients, good people that understood the game and wanted to enjoy it with us. And so I don't know, you know, I didn't know that the time was right. It was just a matter of circumstances when it happened.
talking with Jordan Blair on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jordan, what's the key to being a good trainer?
Well, for me, we set a good foundation for the horse. And that's everything for me. My father is a carpenter. He owns a small construction business in Frankfort, Kentucky. And he can't build a house without the foundation. And I feel the same way about training a racehorse. And whether we get a horse that's come from another trainer or whether we have a horse that we've started from the very beginning, you got to lay that foundation. And what I mean by that is we take baby steps. You know, we're not going to have babies running at Keeneland in April or, you know, at Churchill in May. We really take our time and we really set that foundation and we go slow. We go as fast as the horses will tell us. So once they have that foundation, I've found that you can train harder. You know, you can train them faster. You can run them more frequently. And they get injured less. It's all about managing your horse's fitness and injuries, really. What happens when your horse gets a shin, you know, your babies get a shin, or they wrench an ankle? You know, we're not going to go on with them. I've done that in the past, and it really doesn't work. You know, you usually end up doing more damage than good if you're trying to press for a race, or if you're trying to get through a little lung infection. It's all about managing those little types of things, and it all goes back to focusing on the details. All those little things, you know, can make or break you in a race. We just try to start from the bottom and really use building blocks moving forward. And actually this year is the first year, or last year was the first year that we've got a crop of two-year-olds that we either purchased or people had bred and gave to us that we started getting ready. And I've found that the method that we've used and not faltered from has proven to do very well for us.
Yeah, well, for a young guy, your approach to handling horses and training them would be considered more of an old school approach, where it's a very patient approach to getting a horse ready, and you're not afraid to give them time and the time that they need to come back and to be their best. And if you look at your numbers over the past couple of years, and again, keep in mind, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you've only been training now on your own for about 4 years. Your win percentage is a rock solid 17% the past couple of seasons. This year, interestingly enough, you're sitting here, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, 0 for 8 so far in 2016. But Jordan, you have 4 seconds and a third from those 8 starters, so your horses are really running. Is it a bit more frustrating, though, after winning 17% the past couple of years, to all of a sudden be sitting there with 4 seconds from those 8 starters and not quite getting some of the breaks maybe that you got the past couple of seasons?
Well, the wins are going to come. The wins are going to come. Those horses that are run second, they're going to come. So is it frustrating? Absolutely. We're down in Tampa Bay Downs in our winter base, and we've had some really solid starts and caught some really big bears down here. So I'm not worried about, you know, the 0-for-8 right now. The wins are going to come. Like I said, those horses that have run second, we've got one horse, he's 3 now, a horse by the name of Faction Cat, that's had 3 starts and 3 maiden special weights down here at Tampa with 3 seconds. And every time that he runs, his numbers keep going up. He keeps running faster. And we keep running behind something that's absolutely freakish. He actually ran this past Friday. He ran in the maiden special weight going 7-8, and the horse that won went in 1:22 1/5 in a maiden special weight on the dirt, Tampa Bay Downs, and we were 4 lengths behind him and 12 lengths in front of the rest of the field. So like I said, I know the wins are coming, so I'm not too worried about that. And if I focus too much on my percentages, then I'd really drive myself crazy. I'd probably put horses in the wrong spots or run them back too quick or do something silly like that. So I try not to focus on it. I try to focus on each individual horse and put them in the best spot possible where they can win.
Your wife, Jordan Springer, is an integral part of your operation, and I know that she gets on horses for you in the morning. She's a former jockey. She has now had to slow things down just a little bit, I would say, because you're expecting your first child in just about a month. She's 8 months pregnant. Tell me a little bit about her and what she means to your operation.
Well, she has been extremely important, not only to getting to where we are, but how we got here. We met when I was working for Kenny McPeak. I had taken 5 or 6 horses out to California for the Breeders' Cup, and she was out there. She was riding races, and she was galloping horses, and we met through mutual friends, and I think she breeded a couple of our Breeders' Cup horses, and we kicked off a friendship, and then she came and worked for me and galloped for Kenny, and I stayed in California for the winter, and she came back to Kentucky, and she's one of the best hands on a horse. She's got great hands. She's got great balance. And she's a very talented breeze rider. And you know, she can tell me the talent. You know, if I can't see it myself, she can tell me the talent level of a horse and what she thinks would be the best distance and the best surface and the best level. And we kind of, you know, use that synergy to place our horses. And you're right, she's 8 months pregnant, and she stopped galloping about a month and maybe 6 weeks into the pregnancy. So that was tough, losing that hand on a horse and losing that information. But we've had great help since. And she's actually gotten into equine massage and taken a course. And after she has the baby and after she has some time off after that, she's going to come back and get on horses for us, probably more sparingly, but more like, you know, a breeze rider. And then she's also going to do some equine massage as well.
Forget about equine massage. With as stressful as training horses can be, you need to get her into human massage.
That's right.
Of course, visiting with Jordan Blair on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton, and talking about Jordan Springer, his wife, a former jockey, as he mentioned, now 8 months pregnant. What's the due date, Jordan?
April 5th.
April 5th. So yeah. Will you be looking at the condition book and saying, okay, we can't schedule any runners around that date, give or take a couple of days?
Well, it's gonna be tight because I'll be heading back from Tampa sometime around, you know, in the March, beginning of April, getting ready for Keeneland. And so I'll be hoping that nobody comes early and, that the baby stays on the right date, comes on time. I know that Keeneland doesn't open until, I believe, the 8th of April. And so, you know, let's hope that we don't have any conflicts, because we know what will win. The baby will win.
You know, I noticed as I was getting ready for the program that you are on social media, and people can follow you on Twitter at @JBlairRacing and also the same address on Facebook. How much, as a young trainer in the game, has social media served you as an advantage maybe or played into the way that you conduct your business?
Well, I think, you know, my wife, Jordan, she runs, she does, takes care of the Twitter, and then I take care of the Facebook. And, you know, I'm not sure that it's gotten me any extra business, but I think that, you know, when Jordan posts, you know, we've been successful and we've had a winner, or we've got a horse that's running, then people take notice, you know, people that follow and they watch and they see and they tell their friends and, you know, every time that someone new takes notice, you know, even if we don't gain them as a client today, they might keep watching us on down the road, and they might be, you know, a client on down the road. So I think it's fantastic, Twitter and Facebook. I mean, each one of them has its positives and its negatives. But, you know, it's nice to keep up with it, and it's nice for people to be able to follow what you're doing, whereas maybe they wouldn't otherwise.
Well, we are quickly approaching the end of this particular interview, Jordan. And first of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us here tonight and tell your story. It's really been great, and I wish we could spend another half hour. We could certainly use it here to continue to talk about some of those moments that you've experienced in your career. But I do always like to end by talking to trainers about maybe what's on their bucket list. What things would you just love to accomplish moving forward in the next couple of years?
Well, you know, there's no races that, you know, a lot of people say they want to win the Kentucky Derby. That's not really a goal or an aspiration of mine. If the horse took us there, I mean, it would be a dream come true. But there aren't any particular races. I just want to, you know, I want to grow my business. Right now we've got 8 horses, and we've got, you know, a few babies that'll be coming in the spring. We've got a few orders for 2-year-olds from the 2-year-old sale. So, you know, if we slowly progress every year and gain, like I said, we want good people that enjoy the game and have fun and can have fun with us. You know, that's what I aspire to have, is to have, you know, a growing business with good people and good horses, obviously. And, you know, like we talked about, the wins will come, and, you know, the bigger and better races would be fantastic to win. Obviously, winning a Breeders' Cup race, having, you know, my mother been involved with it for so long and been around those races, that would be a little more sentimental than say, a Triple Crown race. But, yeah, we want to enjoy it. That's why we do it, you know, because we enjoy the horses and we enjoy the sport. We're not in it, you know, to try and get rich, because it's not easy to do. We're in it for the love of the sport.
Well, he's trainer Jordan Blair, and he's doing things the right way. And he did it for you here tonight on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jordan, appreciate the time, my friend.
Thanks, Mike.
All the best. And like all of our guests, receives a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Second half of the program, special encore of our interview with Bodie Miller, who joined us last September. Stay with us as Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Following a powerful sale in 2015, the Fasig Tipton Florida sale once again returns to Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida on Wednesday, March 2nd, with the Breeze Show scheduled for Monday, February 29th. The Fasig Tipton Florida sale was the only 2-year-old sale in 2015 that sold 2 Grade 1 winning colts, including the Eclipse Champion Juvenile. Other Fasig Tipton Florida sale graduates include Grade 2 Futurity Stakes winner Annual Report, Grade 3 Jerome winner Flexibility, and stakes winners and promising 3-year-old colts Awesome Speed, Jan's Reserve, and Shakamot, and the undefeated 3-year-old colt Zulu, who is being pointed to the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth Stakes. 154 entries have been cataloged for this year's Florida sale, and you can download your catalog online now by visiting FasigTipton.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
And they're off in New York. The premier state-bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. the best program.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. But the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit PDJF.org and start making a difference today.